guys, welcome to this week's episode of True Podcast. I'm your host, Alex.
And I'm your host, Rhea.
And today I'm fulfilling my end of the bargain, which is big saddies for me.
If you guys recall, we did an episode at the end of last year where Alex made me watch High School Musical very reluctantly, but I watched it nonetheless. And we discussed it because that's something that she really loved from her childhood. And then I just had hatred for. So the tables have flipped and I have made Alex watch one of my favorite movies of all time, and that is Superbad.
With, I feel like I have to say, even more reluctance
with that's which debatable.
Oh,
that's
I don't debatable. Know. I don't know.
I don't know. I for the longest time like had such like a negative stigma towards High School Musical, that like really borderline loathing. So I think it's like it's in the same ballpark for us.
Yeah. So all right, let's get into it. Okay. So first I want to set the scene here.
Sure.
Because Drea, when she approached me with this whole like, this is what, here's a list of movies I want you to watch. What have you watched already?
Mm-hmm.
And I told her. And so when she's like, I really want you to watch Superbad. I'm just like, ugh, fine. I really don't want to, but because, you know, all is fair,
mm-hmm.
I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, she's like, well, make sure that you listen to it with headphones on.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, was she right. But in order for me to get like the right sort of atmosphere going, because of course I want to watch it on my TV in my room.
Sure.
And not like, because I watched it last night before I went to sleep and I didn't want to just like watch it on my laptop because I want to be able to use my full laptop to write notes.
Sure.
So I have a Roku connected to my smart TV just to use Crunchyroll, the anime app, because mm-hmm. Crunchyroll doesn't have a agreement with Samsung TV.
Right.
And so like just a couple days ago, I went through my Roku on my TV and deleted all the other apps on there besides that. So I had to go back and re-download Netflix onto my Roku because there's a Roku app that you have on your phone, like that you can use as a remote.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do private listening on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I plugged in my headphones to my phone and was able to listen to the audio through there while still seeing the picture through my TV.
Oh, wow. Look at you. Like, so 21st century.
So I, like, put a lot of effort into watching this.
I'm glad. And here's the thing, Alex, like, even going into this conversation, like, I can already tell you have a lot of thoughts to say. But even with your opinion on the movie at this point, I hope that after our conversation, you may have a different opinion on it based on the analyses I give you.
Okay, so I'll just jump in.
There's a reason I wanted you to watch it.
I'm really curious to find out what that reason was.
I mean, it's not like a reason I wanted you specifically to watch it, but a reason I wanted you to watch it because, like, I wanted you to have, like, a different view of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, okay. I'm still curious to hear, like, what you want me to get out of this movie.
Sure, sure, sure.
But I told her at the get-go that I'd try my best not to hate it immediately.
As I did, too, which... And if you come out of it hating it anyway, that's fine. That's right. Fair, because I don't like High School Musical. But okay, let's get into it.
The first thing I wrote down for watching this movie
mm-hmm.
is that I actually thought the opening credits were pretty funny.
I have a fun fact. But you know what? Okay, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. I think we're like...
that's ahead?
Well, here's the thing. We didn't give any sort of like summary as we did with High School Musical. Is my
you
point.
Want to give a summary then?
I'll give a quick summary and then we'll get into like the analyses of it.
Okay,
of it all.
Fine.
So basically this movie is a teen, like high school type of movie that centers around the two main characters, Seth and Evan. And Seth and Evan are seniors in high school and they are literally like at the very end of their high school career, about to transition to college. And it's kind of like this movie that follows them on like that whole transitioning process. And there's a lot of like, you know, nitty gritty things that happen throughout the movie, but the whole like core of it is that the two boys have crushes on these two girls who are played by Emma Stone. And I forget the other actress's name. Do you know who it is, Alex?
No.
Okay. Some actress, not, I hate to like bag on her, but not relevant. I've never seen her in anything after this, but Emma Stone and this other girl. And so Emma Stone's character is having this like big party end of the year. They're all high schoolers. They're trying to get drunk. And like, this. And it's like a big deal. And Evan and Seth aren't like your typical cool guys. They're more on like kind of like that loser kind of spectrum.
Typical
and
they get, cool guys.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Well, because, you know, cool guys can mean different things. But like, I'm trying to say like you're stereotypical, whatever.
By the way, the actress's name is Martha McIsaac.
Martha McIsaac, sorry to throw shade at you. Not that she cares or anyone in listening to this podcast cares. Anyways, so they get invited to this party that Emma Stone is throwing. And she asks them, well, she and then the other girl ask Seth and Evan to bring booze. And obviously they are underage. So it's like this whole mission of them and then their other friend Fogel, who's played by, I forgot what's his name. He's in Pitch Perfect. For like a hot second, he's.
Literally just closed the app.
Well, the judge in Pitch Perfect, like the one that's really skinny, he's Fogel, and like them two and Fogel, they like go on this whole excursion to try to buy booze. They run into cops. Like, there's this whole like, it, you know, it's just like this like horrific kind of thing. Ultimately, it ends up with them going to the party without the booze that like the girl asked for, but like she was like super drunk anyways. It didn't matter. And long story short, they do kind of get with the girl, but then mess it up in a way because like Seth's girl, he like is so drunk that he like headbutts her when he's passing out and like it's all bad. And then Evan's girl is so drunk that like she's trying to get with him and he's like, you're so drunk, I can't do this. And then it ends up with that, like the party being raided by the cops and like them hightailing it out of there, going back to Evan's house in sleeping bags and like having this kind of like intimate moment, like best friends, like bromance kind of deal. And then the movie ends with them at the mall and they meet up with those girls again. And the girls are basically like, hey, thanks for being so nice last night. And each of them go with their respective girl that they were interested in. And that's basically how the movie ends.
Mm-hmm.
And so if without context, like if I'm just telling this to someone, I feel like anyone would be like, this sounds like the stupidest movie ever. And it kind of is. But let's get into it because it really isn't as stupid as it comes off at first. So, opening intro, Alex.
So, as I was starting to say, I thought the opening credits was actually pretty funny. So it's kind of like this almost like, I guess, 70s looking thing where like the song's playing. I don't know, remember what song it was.
Mm-hmm.
And like it both shows like both Seth and Evan's shadows dancing.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, Evan and Seth are played by Michael Cera and Jonah Hill.
Yeah, right. So yeah, they're both dancing. And I thought that Evan's dancing was actually pretty funny.
Okay, so my fun fact about this is, because I have a fun fact section. Actually, it's funny you bring this up because this is one of my fun facts. Mm-hmm. But when the directors of this movie were creating the movie, they wanted to do this opening scene with the guys dancing, but they wanted it to be really like indicative of how a high schooler would dance and not just like, oh, let's train them in dancing and this is this. So they just were like, okay, go in front of the camera and improv dance, like just anything you want to do and just do it. And so, and the thing is that Michael Cera was like, I'm going to do you one better. And he was like, on Blu-ray, you can have an hour long like main menu video going without it ever looping. So I'm going to improv dance for an hour straight and we're going to put it on the Blu-ray main screen and people will watch a whole hour of me dancing without it ever looping. So Michael Cera is literally just like improvising, like no training, like just doing it for a whole hour. And they use that for like that scene. And then also if you have the Blu-ray version, the main menu, you can watch them for a whole hour just dancing.
Yeah. I mean, that is pretty funny. You know, I guess was reminded, and this kind of goes into my next point actually, is I was immediately upset by Jonah Hill.
Okay, why? Like the opening like scene with the whole like porn thing?
Yeah, yes. So I don't need to go, here's the thing. And the reason why Drea had to force me into watching this movie is that movies that are overly crude and have too much cursing, like, immediately just turn me off. Like, right. I'm just like, I don't want to watch it.
Right.
So I immediately get hit with both of those things in, like, the most extreme way.
Right.
That it was kind of like, if it wasn't that I made, like, a very, like, that I want to do this for you for the podcast, I would have just turned it off.
I knew you would.
Like, immediately I wanted to turn off this movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, like, my immediate like annoyance with Jonah Hill's character like made me like think, huh, this is kind of weird for me, because usually like I guess I kind of like things that Michael Cera is in, like he kind of has the habit of being in stupid stuff like this, which I don't really like, but he is like good in like Arrested Development and in Scott Pilgrim. So I mean, I guess there's that, but I'm just kind of like, man, like you're immediately making me favor Michael Cera,
like right off the bat,
because Jonah Hill is all talking about gross things about Michael Cera's mom, like at the beginning, talking about dirty websites, and literally the worst part of any character that Jonah Hill plays is that he just doesn't shut up. He just rambles on forever. So I'm just like, I feel like 100 years has passed, and he's still talking about Michael Cera's mom and these websites. And it was kind of like, I never thought that I'd just sit here and prefer Michael Cera.
Yeah. And to go to your point, I feel like this is the same thing that happened in High School Musical, where like I would say something, you'd immediately be like, well, I have a rebuttal real fast, you know? But so in regard to the profanity, there are 186 uses of the word, of the F word, throughout this whole movie. And it's very intentionally done so. So Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who are the writers of this movie and the producers, directors, whatever they were, they actually wrote this movie when they themselves were in high school. And that's also why the main characters are Seth and Evan, because like Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg.
Right.
So it's written like kind of about them. And their intention for this movie was to show how immature and how awful a lot of like high school boys can be.
Well, I believe it.
Right. And they, like, it was intentionally written that way because they wanted to show how even the worst type of boy can ultimately be good at the end, and like how they didn't like screw the girl, you know, when she was like drunk and stuff. Like, it was to show like a silver lining that like, okay, like maturing, whatever, can happen. And like, it's the reality that like high school boys are this like gross at some point in their life, or like a lot of them can be.
Right.
So all of that was very intentional.
Well, they did their job, because I immediately was just kind of like, ugh. Also that goes in my next point, which is, so near the beginning, like after all of this nonsense that Jonah Hill's character is talking, that Seth is talking, like they finally end up, see, here's the thing. Is that what they do really well is show, you know, what an idiot high school boys can be, because like they, after Jonah Hill picks up Michael Cera, so after Seth picks up Evan, I should just talk about them in the character names, but right. I keep forgetting. So Seth picks up Evan and they drive to school, and Seth, like an imbecile, is just like, hey, let me just park in the faculty parking lot and let's go to a 7-Eleven or whatever convenience store so I can get a Red Bull. And make Evan pay for it.
Yep.
Too. So he's talking nonsense this whole time. He's talking trash on Evan's girl that he has a crush on. And, like, they leave the convenience store, and Seth immediately gets picked on. And I wrote this down, like, immediately after it happened, I wrote this down. That Seth is so annoying to me that I almost didn't feel bad for him that he got spit on by that bully.
Yeah, and
like he gets spit on, I'm just kind of like, well, great.
And that's fair, because it's like, it's kind of like that paradox kind of thing, like when you're in high school, and like bullying does happen every now and then, but like sometimes when you're in high school, you don't shut it down because you're just like, well, that guy's kind of a loser, so he kind of called it, you know? So like everything is really intentional, like all the scenes are really intentional and done so because like they made you not like Seth in the beginning. And then it's like, when you see him being bullied, you're just like, well, he asked for it, you know?
Right. And I hate to like put it that way, because, you know, as an adult, you should, you know, not feel that way about people. But like, I almost didn't feel bad for him. Like, I felt bad for him a little bit, because no one deserves to be spit on, like, for sure. But it was kind of like, dude, you had it coming.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Like
already.
It's all like, yeah, it's all setting the scene to be like, oh God, these boys are super annoying. Totally.
So, how I split this up, like my different like points for this, is my I hate Jonah Hill section, which I just got through.
Okay.
The whole mission to get alcohol.
Oh my God, so funny.
Then the Dartmouth debacle.
And
then I went into like different relationship blocks. Okay. So I'll just go through it that way. So next is the mission to get alcohol. And here's the thing. Who does Fogle think he is? Is he Cher?
I can't. It's like, so funny.
Like, I know that they're supposed to be, like, high school kids and whatever, but I'm just kind of like, who doesn't realize, like, that you, as a human being, have more than one name attached to you?
Yeah.
How you're identified.
To give context for anyone who hasn't seen the movie, and the scene that Alex is referring to is Fogle gets a fake ID, and instead of choosing a name like, whatever, Matthew McConaughey, he chooses the name McLovin with no surname, nothing. It's just McLovin.
And he chooses on his fake ID to not be 21, which would probably be a little bit better of a stretch for him, but he chooses to be 25.
Mm-hmm. Added to the fact that this kid looks like he's 14.
He looks like he's 100 pounds soaking wet. He's super small, super frail looking, and the actor actually looked young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, my next point when this was...
Well, the actor's actually 17 at the time.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go, because I'm just like, he looks like a child.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Jonah Hill, to me, looked old enough to buy alcohol.
Like a 30-year-old. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, actually, that's one of the first things I noticed about him, I think, in the movie, is just like, man, you look old.
And that's kind of funny you say that, because it's like that's the running joke in 21 Jump Street, is that they look like old men in high school, like impersonating like the kids. Yeah. So I feel like, I don't know if it came from this, but like, definitely it's funny you say that. And then that's the running joke in his next big movie. Well, I don't know if it was the next big movie, but like one of his next big movies.
Right. And so obviously there's a lot of stuff that happens in their whole mission to get alcohol to this party.
Mm-hmm.
Because first of all, adding another point to Seth as a human trash bag. So one thing that happens in the movie is, you know, they go to that liquor store to buy the alcohol, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Fogle, he actually does it. Like, he's able to buy the alcohol. However, this convenience store, like, happens to get robbed right at that moment. So he gets, like, decked in the face by the robber.
Mm-hmm.
And the police get called. And because Seth and Evan are doing something gross and stupid, they don't notice, like, what's going on. So when they get there and they see that the cops are there, they assume it's because, oh, they found out that he's, you know, 18, a fake ID. 17, whatever, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what's happening. So Seth's whole thing is, oh, let's abandon him now. let's just abandon our homies.
But, okay, to play devil's advocate, if let's just say hypothetically, because I knew you would never be in the situation, but if you were in the situation where you're with a friend and you're all underage and they're just about to get busted for like trying to buy alcohol while underage and you're not currently involved, like you're just watching it happen, would you wait there and be like, by the way, I'm also involved, or would you run away?
I feel like neither.
I would run away. Like, to be completely honest, if I was a young kid, I'd be like, I'm out of here.
Here's what my compromise to that probably would have been, which, as you pointed out, I would never have been in this situation at that age or ever.
Right. I mean, me neither, but just to, you know.
Yeah. So I think what I probably would have done is I would have just, like, lurked in the background, like, outside to see, and, like, what would happen.
Mm.
I would have not tried to keep going to the party, because that's even what makes Seth worse, is that he's like, well, we still need to go get alcohol. We're leaving Fogle behind to be arrested.
That point is fair.
Go find alcohol and go to the party still.
That point is fair, yeah. If I was in that situation, I would be like, okay, well, the night's a bust.
Yeah, I would go home and probably contact Fogle's parents.
Totally.
Be like, hey, first of all, my car got towed, Seth, because I parked in the faculty lot like a dummy. So, because that's another thing too, that like, and you actually never see that resolved in the movie. Like,
Seth, yeah, I know, like what happens to the car.
And he's just like, I don't want to go home. My parents are going to ground me. I'm just kind of like, yeah, anyway. So, yeah.
Before you move on past the boo scene, though, I want to point out, like, one of my all-time favorite scenes from the whole movie is just before the scene that we've been talking about where Fogle gets decked, you know, by the robber or whatever.
Right.
And Seth originally was going to be the one to try to buy alcohol, and he goes into, like, the supermarket or whatever. And he, like, and it's so funny, this part, because he's, like, there, he goes through these different, like, scenarios, like it shows him going through the different scenarios of buying booze, and like every time you realize that it's like a fantasy, and like three times, like the most outrageous thing happens. Like the first time is like this old lady like is like, let me buy the alcohol for you. And then
the
she's like,
the first time was the checker believed.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then
yeah,
it was
yeah.
the old lady. Then it was the really crazy fight.
The crazy fight was the funniest. And then it like culminates with him just walking out and be like, shut up, I couldn't do it, you know? And right. like that like montage of the three scenarios that could have happened, it's just so funny to me. Like that whole scene is so hilarious. Like you can't tell me it wasn't funny.
I was pretty annoyed at that point.
Okay.
I didn't loosen up until probably the cops, actually, but we'll mm-hmm. get into those later.
Sure.
So the next part, my next comment on the mission to get alcohol. So after, you know, the whole thing with Fogel, like, you know, Evan is like, dude, we can't just leave Fogel behind, because mm-hmm. Evan is really like on all in this movie, kind of actually the real homie.
Yeah.
The entire time. Like he's, you know, obviously he's doing things that are dumb.
Well, until the very end, but we'll get there later.
Okay, sure, whatever. But like for the most part, like he's actually pretty okay. Like obviously he shouldn't be doing any of this, but like he's the least horrible.
He has like a good moral compass, yeah.
Relatively, yes. And so Evan's just like, dude, we can't go. And then Seth is being, you know, dumb and whatever. And Seth, for the first time in the movie, because this happens at least twice, mm-hmm. gets hit by a car.
So some
car is backing up and backs up into him and like sends him flying, which I guess he does some really good physical comedy during this movie, because he really just gets wrecked the entire time.
It's not just any car, it's my all-time favorite character's car.
Does he have a name?
Joe Latriglio. I mean, it's Joe Latriglio. I don't know what his name is in the movie.
Oh well, anyway, because I know that he's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, right?
He is in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's also in Pitch Perfect. He has a cameo in Pitch Perfect.
Right.
He's been in a few things, but he's like one of my favorite actors. And every single time he's ever in a role, he basically plays the same kind of like naive, extreme character. And every single part of the scenes where he's in this movie make me die laughing. Like he's so cringy funny. I love it.
Yeah, so Seth, also like a dummy, chooses, well, this is going to be the opportunity now that I'm going to extort this guy into getting his alcohol or money to mm-hmm. buy alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy is just kind of like, hey, come to me with this party. Like, you'll be able to take alcohol from there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need to tell the cops, because like he says right away, which you never really get any more, like, I think, description of what that is. It's like, I'm wanted right now by the police for a nonviolent crime, so don't tell the police.
Yeah.
Which is really, as a kid, the point where you should just be like, all right, well, I'm walking away now.
But Seth's like, perfect.
Because Seth is the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And so they go with him, which is also stupid. You should never get in the car with strangers, kids. But anyway. So they go with them to this ridiculous party with these, like, crazy people. Like, the host mm-hmm. of this party is insane. I'm not going to get into too many of the details because I really don't want to.
Sure.
But, like, one thing that happens is Evan's kind of just, like, over it. Like, dude, like, this, everything's crazy, because, like, they show up with their really weird guy. Mm-hmm. And the weird guy almost instantaneously gets into the fight with the party host. Like, gets the snot beat out of him.
Right.
So Evan just kind of like, this is crazy. I think that we should bounce. And Seth's like, nah, bro, we need to steal alcohol from this party right now, even though I just saw the party's host go insane.
Meanwhile, the method in which they steal the alcohol to this day repulses me to my core.
And that's what I'm about to get to right now. This is exactly what I'm about to get to. So what Seth's bright idea is, like, when all this crazy stuff happens in the meanwhile, which one of the funniest parts actually to me that happens in that party is when Evan comes back and he's in that bedroom and he calls he calls Becca and like hangs up and whatever, and then all these people come in to do cocaine.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember exactly how he said it, but it was really funny. But the guy is like, hey, do you want some? And then his instantaneous answer, like, no way, man. Like, it was really just so funny. And they end up making him sing.
I thought you were gonna mention the singing part where they're just like, oh, this guy has the voice of an angel, and it's like the ugliest singing. They're just like, oh, it's so beautiful.
Right. So when the coked out guys are just like, hey, this is the brother of, you know, so and so, and he's a really good singer, blah blah blah. I'm just like, no, he's really doesn't, this song is not good. Anyway, so that's so beside good. The point, really. So what Seth ultimately ends up doing is, by circumstances that I don't want to talk about because it's way too gross, he ends up in the basement,
mm-hmm.
and he spies some laundry detergent bottles, and he's mm-hmm. just like, hey, there's a refrigerator down here full of beer. Let me pour out this laundry detergent
mm-hmm.
and pour in beer and bring that to the party.
Yep.
So not only is that horrifying to think about, is that when he gets to the party, people are drinking it.
And it's like green colored, right? It's like, yes, it's like the it's color green. Of the detergent.
The detergent was blue and the beer was yellow, so it ended up being green. And I'm just kind of like, this is exactly what happened, not exactly what happened, but this is what happened a couple years ago when people started eating the Tide Pods
and they were all dying. Yeah,
so I'm just kind of like, how are people just not like passing out like with seizures, dying?
Yeah, that's
this detergent beer.
The most disturbing part of the whole movie to me.
I couldn't handle that. Like, because you didn't see gross. Anyone drink out of it until the end of the movie. So by that point, I'm just kind of like, I am ready to throw in the towel, man.
Yeah.
But anyway, so moving on. So one theme that I feel like is clearly demonstrated throughout the entire movie, and they do it very heavy-handedly, mm-hmm. which they get into in a more understandable way towards the end, is that Seth is so upset that he didn't get into Dartmouth with Fogle and Evan.
Because mm-hmm.
apparently that was their plan that was decided upon before the movie. It's like, oh, we're going to all go to Dartmouth.
Right.
Which is a really good school. And obviously, Seth ain't getting into that school.
Right.
Because he's a dum-dum. Because mm-hmm. he's putting beer in laundry detergent.
Yeah.
Automatic reject. So, like, the entire movie, he's bringing up Dartmouth. Like, mm-hmm. he keeps going into it. And then after Seth and Evan run away from the crazy party,
mm-hmm.
Evan chooses that point to be like, oh, it finally comes out. I'm just like, what do you mean it finally comes out? He's been talking smack about Dartmouth and your Dartmouth plans the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of tore into Seth a little bit after that. And I found myself in that moment, like, agreeing totally with everything that Evan was saying. Like, right. saying that Seth was holding him back. 100% mm-hmm. he was.
Mm-hmm.
Because he just doesn't seem like a good friend. Because Seth is so selfish.
Right.
Everything in the movie that I had seen, at least.
Right.
Was about Seth and what he wanted.
Right. Absolutely.
He had very little regard for Evan this entire time. Obviously, he doesn't care at all about Fogle.
Totally. It's also not so much he doesn't care anything for Fogle, but it's more of he has the, like, what's the word? He resents Fogle at the right. moment because of the whole them yes. getting into Dartmouth together.
And you find out in the end of the movie, it's because, like, you find out towards the end of the movie that Seth has known the entire time that Fogle and Evan were going to be living together at Dartmouth,
mm-hmm.
even though Evan kept saying that he wasn't, or that he mm-hmm. didn't want to, and, you know, all this whatever. And for whatever reason, I guess because they're best friends, was so upset about that, which I'm just like, if you're really best friends, you should probably just be happy for them that they got into a good school. Like,
right.
100% understandable if you're disappointed that you couldn't go to the same university as your friends.
Right.
At the same time, it's not their fault.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something put on them, but of course they're teenagers, so I guess you don't have like that, you know, mature thinking
wherewithal. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just kind of like, I kind of understand why Evan be like, dude, you're holding me back, and dude, you're super selfish, because he really is.
Totally.
So, and then I guess getting into like the different relationships between people that are evolving like over this entire time. So Evan and Becca, really actually pretty cute mm-hmm. in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, he's just crushing out on her or whatever. And it's actually really sweet because the entire time, like, all he's ever gone on about is that he respects her so much.
Right.
So, you know, I actually was like, hey, man, I can root for this relationship a little bit. I mean, not in the way that they were aiming for.
Mm-hmm. So, you liked it in the beginning. What is your, like, so you didn't like it at the end, is what you're saying?
It's not that I didn't like it at the end. Well, in the very end, I still did like it, actually. Mm-hmm. It was in the middle when she was acting like a fool, when she was really drunk.
When she was drunk, yeah. But, like, I feel like that made me like it more because it, like, showed how Evan, like, he wasn't just, like, talking a talk.
Right, yeah.
He, like, walked the walk because he was saying, like, I respect her, da-da-da-da, and then she was really drunk, and she's like, let's have sex, you know? And then he's like, I don't want to, like, you're not going to remember this when you're sober, and, like, you know?
Right. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be condoning really any of that behavior, but as it happened there, I'm just kind of like, all right, I can be happy with the fact that he's just not trying to take advantage of a drunk person.
Right.
I'm just like, that makes you okay, because that's like the opposite of everything that Seth was trying to do.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. he's only trying to get with Jules while she was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so funny, because that's the exact opposite situation where Jules was totally sober and he was like out of his mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So to go to your point about the whole, like, how it was flipped for Seth when he, like, was trying to get with Emma Stone's character, like, Jules, and she was sober the whole time. And, like, he said to her, like, you'd never get with me if you were sober, even though she was, like, actually sober and she was, like, showing interest in him. And, like, this is one of the main themes that Seth Rogen wanted to, like, introduce into this movie, because he wanted it to be a giant case study of manhood. Okay. And how there's, like, a lot of different, like, definitions of what manhood could be. And so, like, for Evan, for example, like, he was, like, very insecure, but, like, good to his core, and, like, this is this. And then Seth had, like, a lot of, like, body image issues. And so, like, when he was saying that, like, obviously, like, when you're drunk, you tend to say things that are, like, you wouldn't normally say when you're sober. And so he's telling her, like, you wouldn't be with me if you were, like, sober, this is this, you know? So it's, like, showing how he was, like, he didn't have a very good, like, self-image of himself.
Right, yeah.
And so it was, like, breaking down all these, like, barriers of, like, men are supposed to be very confident, they're supposed to be very bold, and they're the ones that put themselves out there. And so it was supposed to show how, like, that's not how it is. Like, there's more of a commentary on, like, the mental wherewithal of men.
Right. I mean, I have to say that Jules as a character, like, seems to be, like, the coolest and most understanding person ever for all the, like, shenanigans she was put through since the beginning of the movie.
Totally.
Like, I don't understand how, like, we got to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's giving him another shot after, like, blowing it so many times.
Mm-hmm.
And just well, like, it, dude, it, like, you're so cool, but you really deserve better than Seth. Especially
totally.
That's the whole thing, like, that he keeps saying, which is the dumbest thing ever. Well, I mean, I guess maybe, like, that's the idea, like, maybe dating at that time for those, like, that age group right before you go to college is, like, he is stuck on the idea of making her his girlfriend for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Not, like, with an option for longer, it seems, but just mm-hmm. for the summer, which I'm just kind of like, you're kind of aiming low there, buddy.
Yeah. And, like, it doesn't necessarily, like, you don't necessarily know what happens. Like, it's a open to interpretation ending
mm-hmm.
where, like, both the guys are walking away with the girls and they kind of look back at each other and it just kind of ends there. So, based on the evolution that you see in the characters from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie, you can determine whether they ended up getting together just for the summer, ended up getting together at all, or ended up getting together and staying together longer, up to, like, you know, your liking.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, anything with Seth Rogen, well, not Seth, well, Seth Rogen too, but anything with Seth's character, mm-hmm. I'm just kind of like, I'm immediately just rooting for your downfall, sir.
Oh my gosh, okay. Because
you're the worst. But anyway, actually the best part of the movie to me, and not all the parts, because they were even doing and saying a lot of borderline things, I'm just kind of like, I want to turn this movie off, but sure. Actually the most redeeming part, not redeeming either, but the best part of the movie to me was Fogel and the cops, Michael's
yeah, their little friendship. Yeah, it's so funny.
So, like, going back to, you know, more the beginning of the movie, so, like, these are the cops that pull up to the robbery scene, like, when Fogel is trying to buy the alcohol, and they were just like, oh, you know, where are you going? Because, like, obviously Fogel is trying to get out of there, like, ASAP.
Yeah.
And so he's just like, oh, I'm going, you know, to this and this place. Like, I'm missing my bus, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, we'll just take you there. And he ends up going on this ridiculous ride-along
mm-hmm.
with these two cops, like, going to, like, different, like, other crime scenes with them and stuff, and, like, drinking with them at a bar and, like, all this whatever. I'm just kind of like, those cops would be fired. fired.
Totally. Well, but like, yeah, I'm with you. Like that whole, the whole Fogel cop scenes are, it's so outlandish, but definitely like adds to the whole comedic factor. Cause like this would not happen. Like there's no way.
No, it's like, yeah. I mean, it was the most tolerable part of the movie for me when they, cause they ended up actually, I think, in both parties that Evan and Seth were at. So they ended up at the crazy party, the first one, to like break up some of that stuff. Or no, they get called there by the host's fiance.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's how like the guys meet up with Fogel again.
Right. Yeah. Because the cops stop him. Because the cops are the one who hit Seth a second time with the car.
Yeah.
And break the windshield of their car, by the way.
Well, he's a big boy.
Well, yeah, but also, Seth wouldn't be walking away after breaking the windshield of a car.
That's true.
Because he totally just, like, is fine.
I mean, it's all, you know, a movie. Right.
So, yeah, like, they try to, like, well, Fogel's still in the car at that point, so he doesn't know that it's his friend. So he's just like, hey, like, we just, like, I think Seth Rogen's character, Michaels, just gets back in the car and is like, hey, what, you know, will you write down, testify that this is what happened, you know, to make it seem like they didn't actually just run over someone.
Mm-hmm.
And Fogel's like, yeah, man, you guys are cool, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, that's like kind of how it goes. Like they tried to get Fogel to, you know, like write down, this is what happened. And then eventually they break up, Jules's party.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really funny and actually one of the, like, the only redeeming moment for Seth for me. Because at this point, Evan is, like, really upset about Becca and he's, like, getting totally wasted. And Seth doesn't want Evan to get in trouble, so he carries him out of the party.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just kind of like, that's the only kind of nice thing you've done for your friend this entire time. But anyway, So there's this one, like, really, like, short, like, 5-second scene where, like, they're kicking people out and whatever. And then all of a sudden it's Slater, it's Bill Hader's character. Mm-hmm. And like he has 2 drinks in his hand and he's just dancing alone in a room. And just kind of like, man, that cracked up.
I love Bill Hader.
Yeah, Bill Hader is so funny. I love him on SNL. Oh, when he was on SNL.
Yeah.
And then at the end, like, they end up collecting Fogel again. And just kind of like, we just wanted to show that cops can be fun too. I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay, bro.
Yeah.
It's and like then, so they arrest him in front of everyone to make him look cool. So All of his high school friends can think that he's like a cool, like tough guy and whatever.
Bad boy, yeah.
Yeah. So then they go to a parking lot because they have to, you know, take care of the squad car now because there's so much damage to it from all the nonsense they've done so far in this movie.
Yeah.
And Bill Hader is doing drunken donuts in this car and ends up hitting it against a light pole. So they decide then, because they still have some extra alcohol, that they're just going to light it on fire. So like they pour alcohol over it and then Seth Rogen, Michaels, throws a Molotov cocktail at it. And then they let Fogel shoot at it.
Yeah. So outrageous. It's such an outrageous scene.
Yeah, so I think them, like, they were the biggest scene stealers in the movie, and I think that It was really necessary for me because I was getting so annoyed at all the kids.
You basically are supposed to be annoyed at the kids. But if you don't, do you have any other comments? Because I want to share, like...
That's all some... I have to say.
Okay, I want to share some commentary on it now.
Go for it.
Like, as I mentioned earlier, everything was really intentional with this movie, obviously. And so this is a really, like... influential benchmark movie for our generation because Prior to this movie coming out, like a lot of the teen movies that were, you know, very popularized and like considered classics or like 16 Candles, like Revenge of the Nerds, American Pie, like a lot of those movies that had these like themes of like, let's get drunk, let's like have sex with a girl and like party, you know, till like, you know, we can't party anymore. And That was kind of like the normalization of teen movies and kind of like highlighting that like this is the cool thing to do. And so this movie was like a big thing because it was like the first time that there was like a teen movie where it's like, okay, yeah, like this thing, these things happen in high school, like kids are getting drunk, kids are doing illicit things, but ultimately like we're not going to create the girl as like a commodity, like they're not going to objectify the girl. And so we're going to like have, we're going to show how men can respect the girl, and then the girl can play like a powerful role in the case of like Jules, and then the case of Michael Cera's character. And so it was like a big commentary. And then after that is like when a lot of movies started like flipping the like that whole concept of like what a teen movie means. And right. then from that, we started getting like more progressive movies where it shows like more like socially acceptable themes. So it was like a really important movie for our time. And especially since it came out like when we were in sixth grade. And so we saw a lot of like the evolution before and after that. And then ultimately, like I said before, it was supposed to show how like teenagers can still grow up. Like in the case of like Seth, you know, in the beginning, he was the worst. And in the end, you see like, no, he really actually cared about Evan. He like saved him from the party. And then they have that whole scene after the party where they're in Evan's basement and they like are looking at each other in their little sleeping bags. And they have this whole moment where they go back and forth. And they're like, man, like, I love you, man. Like, I don't know why that's like not, why we don't say it all the time. Like, I just love you. I want to shout it from the rooftops. And it like showed how it's like, you don't just have to have like a sexual relationship for it to be like normal, you know, like guys can have healthy friend relationships with each other and it's not weird, you know, like they're just like normalizing like guys having feelings. And so like, there was like that whole scene where like, they're like sleeping together. And then in the morning when he's like, oh, awkward, like I should leave. And then Michael Cera is like, no, like you can hang out. Like we can hang out. It's totally normal. And then they go to like the mom and they have the whole thing. And it like showed how, you know, basically like, yes, they're fools, but like at the end of the day, they care about each other, they're friends, like they're trying to move past it. You know, when Seth Rogen had that whole like come to Jesus moment where he's just like, I'm not mad at you, man. Like, I'm happy you're going with Fogel. Like, I just needed time to like process it, you know? And in the end, they, when they're like going away, their separate ways with the girls, and then they keep looking back at each other and just like staring at each other. And it kind of like shows that whole like wholesome, like, this whole movie, they just been fixated on the girl when at the end it's like, but like, I want to be with my friend. Like, I miss my friend. I care about my friend, you know?
Yeah. See, I don't disagree with, you know, the things that you brought up, because I'm sure, you know, you researched those things and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing for me, which, you know, is a very typical comment I feel like coming from me, is that if they wanted to make those, you know, statements,
mm-hmm.
to me, it's getting buried underneath all this garbage.
Sure. I feel like that's fair. I feel like
I'm not, like, I'm seeing, like, it takes me really having to look at it to see the point that they're trying to make, because mm-hmm. I'm getting so distracted by all the things that are ticking me off.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because, like, I told you, I would have turned the movie off within the first 5 minutes.
Sure.
I wouldn't have even made it to the end to find, like, their, you know, whole, oh, some guys can actually be good to girls and some girls could actually, you know, be really cool and like have, you know, good power dynamic or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would have loved that if it could have just calmed down a little bit. Cause I feel like, you know, you said that this came out when we were sixth grade.
Yeah.
So to
or
me,
sixth or seventh, something like that.
Well, I know that during that period of time, like that, at least in my consciousness, like marked a time where all these really irritating movies were coming out that were okay. like of the same like type,
mm-hmm.
so, like Superbad being one of them. And then one of them that you also want me to watch, which I feel like you made me watch like a scene or two of, was Pineapple Express, like all that stuff.
Did that come out at the same time?
I think around the same time, like within a couple years of each other. That's what I mean by like, you know, relatively soon to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, there was a couple years after that then that all these like really like raunchy comedies were starting to become in vogue that I'm just kind of like,
I can see. I mean, obviously, like, Seth Rogen is a polarizing person in general. And I feel like, I know. I feel like a lot of people, like, either love him or they can't stand him. So, right. like, I can understand that because his style isn't conventional. Like, it's not, like you're saying, it's not straight to the point. It's not being like, hey, this is the themes that we're going to put out there. It's more of, like, you have to look at it from, like, a more, like, critical lens to understand everything that's going on. So I can get that. Like, I get why you would have such a hard time watching this. Me, on the other hand, like, obviously, like, I like Seth Rogen. I think he's funny. So I had a much easier time watching this and also getting, like, you know, the message from it and, right. and all that good stuff. But that being said, I hope you can now look at it with a more understanding eye, even though That's you're nice. Not necessarily, like, going to choose to watch it again.
I'm definitely not going to choose to watch it again.
Right.
But yes, I can concede that, you know, if those were the points they were trying to make, they did execute them in some kind of way, not in the way that I would have wanted them to, but in a way that was there. But it's actually really funny what you said about like the teen like movie sort of deal, because actually one of the guys doing cocaine at the party, he played Michael in 10 Things I Hate About You, which is another really big teen movie. So like when I saw, because and he had some really like direct lines with Michael Cera, like he had his arm over his shoulder, I think, even. So I was actually looking at that last night, and it struck me as I was watching him, just like, huh, like these are like two different generations of teen like actors, like teen movie actors, like right next to each other. I'm just kind of like, if that was an intentional thing, that's actually kind of clever.
I don't know if that's intentional, but it very much like could have been. That's funny though. Like, I wouldn't have known that. I definitely don't know that trivia.
Yeah, because I had just watched, well, like a couple weeks ago, I just rewatched 10 Things I Hate About You, because I love that movie. Well, yeah. And that was a pretty big teen movie for its time.
Yeah, I mean, there's like a lot of teen movies that like, I mean, you could say were like big teen movies, but like, I guess like the most influential ones were the ones I listed. But there, I mean, I can name like a bunch also, like, you know, John Tucker Must Die, like, you know, like a bunch that I really liked. But yeah. So that being said,
it's kind of funny because I told you last time that I wish I was watching, like, I was with you when you watched High School Musical, because I would have loved to hear you like yell at the TV.
Yeah.
If you would have been with me watching this movie, I would have been yelling at you the entire time.
That's why I didn't want to watch. I didn't say at any point I wanted to watch it with you. I just wanted you to watch it.
Jonah Hill's the worst.
Looking at it in hindsight now, though, with like the commentary, and now that you've like seen it all as a whole, like, can you at least say that like it wasn't as horrible as maybe you once thought it was?
Honestly, I didn't really have like much of a idea what it was about before.
Okay.
I can say that the movie leveled out at some point. Like at some point it stopped being so exhaustingly irritating, and like it leveled out, and then kind of like, okay, fine. I'll say that.
Sure.
Because at the beginning I was ready to throw some hands.
Sure. That's fair, because when it comes to like the Seth Rogen movies, I feel like this one isn't like one of my all-time favorites in terms of comedy. I think it's one of my all-time favorites in what it stood for.
But anyway, for next time on watching a movie you haven't watched before, apparently what's going to be in your future is watching High School Musical 2.
Seriously? That's the next one you're going to make me watch?
No, it's probably not.
God.
I imagine that I'll probably make you watch The Greatest Showman, because I'm so over you and you not watching.
I do want to watch that one, so I would be okay with doing that, definitely. Okay, that sounds good. That's fair. And then I will also choose a movie for you that you haven't seen that you don't necessarily hate either.
That's good.
Okay, that sounds good.
Next time we're not going to punish each other.
Next time will be more of a mutual diagnosis of the movie.
Yeah, because I just want you to watch The Greatest Showman after, like, what, 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, and I really want to watch it, too. I just haven't. And I've been, and, like, just of late, like, I keep on seeing it come up on, like, my recommended on, like, Netflix or something, or wherever it's streaming, like, Amazon Prime or something like that. And I keep on being like, oh, I gotta watch it. And every time I see it, I'm like in the middle of doing something. So hopefully soon I get to watch it.
Yeah.
But anyway, that has been our podcast, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed Superbad. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. But other than that, Alex, any last words?
If you're getting as offended like I do by crude things, that I would suggest that you not do it.
I mean, I feel like if they listen to this podcast and they heard your like whole take on the whole,
because a lot of things were omitted,
right?
But I would never want to talk about them.
If you're not a Seth Rogen fan, maybe it's not for you, but I recommend it highly.
Yeah, well, thanks for listening, you guys. We'll see you next time.
See you guys.